Welcome to the Legally Sound Smart Business Show, your weekly look at legal news and questions in the business world. Here are your hosts, Nasser Pasha and Matt Staub.
All right, this is Nasser Pasha.
And this is Matt Staub.
Welcome to Legally Sound Smart Business, where we cover your legal questions, your business legal questions that you submit to our podcast, as well as business in the news with a legal twist at the end, a little bit of a legal twist. So our first article here today, what do we got, Matt?
This is pretty interesting. It's kind of confusing, too, because it's two companies that are disputing Torchy's Tacos and Texas Taco Company, but the dispute is over pizza. So right off the bat, they chose awful names. It's not surprising they're now in a lawsuit against each other. But it essentially comes down to the trade secrets. So obviously, you know, in restaurants, we're talking about the food that's made or possibly even a certain recipe that is put together with some of the ingredients.
Matt, you realize this is the second pizza article we've covered. I know you love pizza, but we can't keep doing this. Maybe down the line we can do a pizza-themed episode, but this will be the last one for a while, I promise.
Yeah, I usually just scan articles, and when I see the word pizza, I just select it just because I enjoy talking about it.
Okay.
It's been such a big part of my life, working for years at a pizza place.
Well, hopefully your experience can come into play in this. So this is a dispute on the ingredients, the training manuals, and so forth. I mean, frankly, what kind of ingredients go to a pizza? I mean, it's pretty basic.
Well, yes and no. It depends if people make their own sauce. Places are typically going to make their own dough. Some of the bigger chains have frozen dough that's in, but I guess that too is also a recipe that's brought down from corporate. So the dough is big. The sauce can be big. Other than that, the toppings are the toppings. You're not going to get a bunch of variation there. So I'm guessing it's probably over the dough. In my opinion, we're already getting into my pizza love now. In my opinion, the dough is the most important part of the pizza, the crust.
Really? I think it's the sauce. I mean, dough is important, but to me, if it's a good sauce, it makes a big impact.
That's one person's opinion, but
yeah, it's the opinion.
There's some pictures on here too. It looks like it's some sort of stuffed pizza, or the pizza that's with the crust on top as well. The two pictures look very similar. Down to the plating, the cut, the plating style, just they do look identical. So this is pretty interesting because if you look down later in the article, there was some sort of investigator involved too.
I think they hired a PI, right?
Right.
And they sent a PI in to investigate and they saw that they were using the exact same plating techniques and the exact same rest. In fact, I'm reading here, they actually recorded the conversation. This must not have been in California because you can't record somebody without both parties' consent. I think this was in Texas, right?
Texas, yeah.
Texas is different. It's a one-party state where you only need one party's consent to actually record a conversation. And so they recorded this conversation, and one of the parties admits that the pizza recipes being used by this other restaurant were 100 to 90% of the original restaurant's recipes, and that about 30, 40% of the other recipes were also theirs. That's not too good for their lawsuit.
Right. We don't have all the facts here, but I'd also be interested to see what, you know, you need to start from the beginning. And this happened to me when I worked at a chain pizza place. Have everyone that worked there sign some sort of agreement saying they're not going to steal any recipes. At least you have something in writing, something in place to prove that that person knew that they weren't supposed to take information from the company.
That's true. And Matt just named one of the basic elements of a trade secret is that you have to make it a secret and it has to be held out as a secret. And so ingredients in a sauce, which is the more important part of the pizza, or the less important part would be the dough, is the ingredients in those is actually a common thing to consider a trade secret. We have clients that manufacture candy, chocolate. It's a very common thing. If you see a lot of even the supplements, there's always that proprietary formula that even the FDA to a certain extent allows to be named nameless. But of course, that's been an object of controversy because a lot of time that proprietary formula is filled with God knows what, sugar and starch, etc. So I should say this. If you do want to have a trade secret, make sure you get that in writing and through some kind of confidentiality agreement, but also understand what your trade secret actually is. It's not necessarily that a pizza's with dough, cheese, and tomato sauce. It's a little bit more than that.
I think that's great advice, and that's probably what should have happened at the beginning of this, but it didn't, and now we're the ones lucky enough to be discussing pizza.
Yeah.
So hopefully there's more of this, just so I can talk more about pizza every episode.
But we'll see about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get into our first question here because it kind of draws off the first article here. This comes from a green solution company in Orange County. I'm not even sure what that means other than you put green in front of something and you can just charge more for it.
Yeah.
The question is, what's the first thing I should get trademarked in my company? The name, the tagline, or the logo?
The first thing. What does he mean by that? Why not just trademark all of them?
Right. What you should probably do is just look at the beginning and see how important is it to get any of these things trademarked, and then look at your budget. If you have a budget to do all three and you want to do all three and you think it's necessary, then like you said, go for it. But let's say maybe this business only has enough money in the budget to trademark one of them. How does it decide, you know, which one they should trademark?
I think that's a more important question is, if you were to choose one, your company name, your tagline, or your logo, which one would you do? Well, I think it's obvious. I tell you this, every company loves their logo. I'm sure as colleagues of other business owners, you get this question, what do you think about my logo? And I'm of the position that so long as you like it, that's what matters. Unless you're spending tens of thousands of dollars on market research, I don't think the logo really, really matters that much.
Right.
So long as it's good looking. And so the question is someone really going to steal your logo? And if you're worried about budgets, then you're probably not going to have established your marketing brand as of yet. So no one's going to really steal your logo. But your business name, I can see how that's definitely something that's not going to change for the long term.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. The name's not going to change. Logos change all the time. And how many logos are really that noticeable? Obviously, there's huge brands worldwide, a Nike, an Apple, or something like that. But how many local logos do you see and really recognize it? Yeah, I think you're right. The name is the go-to first. And then if you really want to go after a logo or tagline, then by all means, go for it.
But I've also seen, like, for example, up in North County, San Diego, there was a development maybe 10 years ago, Forest Ranch. I'm sure many of our listeners have heard of it. And a lot of the small business owners in the area wanted to call their business something like 4S Mortgage or whatever, right? And there was actually a lot of pushback from the developers because they had trademarked that 4S. And so if your budget is such that you have to choose one, I think it's obvious. But if you can establish your trademark protection for all three, including your tagline, it definitely helps.
Right. Well, I think that's great advice. So hopefully the Green Solution Company, whatever that means, is listening. And
what if their company name is Green Solution Company?
No idea.
Maybe that's what they mean. I hope not, because we have to make it anonymous. So that reminds me, you can always send your questions in to ask@legallysoundsmartbusiness.com, and we'll anonymize your questions. Just make sure you let us know where you're from and what location and what kind of business you're in. That'll help us answer your question, hopefully.
All right. Well, next article here is about a partnership. This coffee shop, there's two partners, which it's actually, I think it's an LLC, but there is these two partners, and surprise, surprise, there's a dispute. One partner was doing some questionable things, jeopardized the business, the coffee shop, and now the other partner is seeking recourse. But the problem here is that there's no formal partnership agreement that has the terms between the partners. That's a huge issue, obviously.
Yeah, no formal agreement. That's just bothersome, especially when you've gone through the trouble in forming an LLC. One of the next things you do is form a partnership agreement. But you know what? On one hand, I understand this because a lot of people like to do business an old way of shaking hands and you trusting the other person. And I respect that. And even as an attorney, that seems strange, but it makes sense in certain cases. The problem is it's so easy to just have that conversation and just put it in writing. Have an attorney draft it up and go, look, you know, me and my partner decided this and this is what we want to do. And that attorney will come back to you and say, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? But once you have those conversations, it's just once. Once you have the conversation, it's done, and it'll make your business relationship so much better. Here, the claimant also learned how the other partner was pocketing the shop's funds for himself to pay for his personal expenses, as well as tried to exclude her from the business. Now, that's one perspective, but Matt, I'm sure you know the reality is one of the partners probably thought that that was okay, or it was understood, or it's not that big of a deal. And the reason is because they never had the conversation in the first place.
Right. It just makes me start to think why there would be nothing that was put in writing. And I'm sure there's a bunch of reasons. I don't think it's laziness, because they went through the hassle of setting up an LLC. That takes some work. I think it could be one of those instances where you have two people and they just don't want to discuss what would happen if there ever was a dispute. You need to put something in writing just so you know how the profits are split up. Sometimes it's just people that don't want to talk about those things. And if that's the case, you probably shouldn't go into a business to begin with someone else, because disputes are going to arise and you need to have something in writing to look to figure out how to resolve those disputes.
One of the issues here is that LLCs are very easy to form compared to corporations, for example. But everyone understands, okay, I need an LLC to protect my liability from other parties, but then they don't go through the trouble of putting a formal partnership agreement to protect your liability from your partners themselves. And so on one hand, they're looking for protecting their liability from outsiders, but yeah, they're not looking indoors.
You always need to put these agreements in writing because, like I said, there's going to be something that comes up or some sort of question, and you need to have that document to look to as your roadmap or whatever you want to call it. And that's going to resolve 95% of issues, just what you guys agreed to at the beginning. And it's as simple as that, but I guess not simple enough for these coffee owners. Where was this at?
I think it was another Texas one.
Yeah.
All the business is going on in Texas.
What's going on apparently in Texas these days?
Well, it's coffee instead of pizza this time.
I like coffee too, but I didn't work at a coffee place.
We should have a coffee and a pizza article every week to cover our bases.
Can probably do that.
And hopefully get a sponsor in that area as well. Well, speaking of pizza, you know, I burned the top of my mouth on a cheese of pizza this week. And apparently when I looked it up online, trying to figure out how to minimize the pain, it's called a pizza mouth. Have you heard of that term before?
I don't think I've heard of the term, but yeah, that makes sense. I think that's happened to everyone. Usually it happens to kids. I'm kind of confused why you haven't learned at this point. You should figure out that pizza can be hot when it comes out of an oven.
That's true. Well, it was the microwave's fault, really. And I think that's the problem. Well, I like my pizza hot, unlike other people. You know, I like the sauce, which is the best part of the pizza, as we've established through fact and research.
I think my wife would probably agree with you. She's a big sauce fan too, but you guys are just wrong, but that's all right.
I think it's much easier to make, I don't know why we're talking about this topic again, but I think it's much easier to make a good dough because all you need to do is bake it fresh. But the sauce, I think a lot of pizza joints just cut corners there.
All right, we're going to disagree because I can go on about this forever. I'm just going to get into the next question so I stop talking about it.
Okay. All right, let's go. Okay,
so this is from a mobile app company in San Diego.
That narrows it down.
I have worked hundreds of hours for a friend's company under the idea that once it was up and running, I would be compensated. Now he's making money and I haven't received anything. What are my options?
Oh, man. I don't understand why people just put in work without knowing what they're going to get in return. I mean, this is kind of basic. Looked like it was his friend, but I don't know. This is just disturbing in some ways.
Yeah, I think, you know, the relationship, being a friend, I could see someone wanting to help a friend out. I would do something. If a friend asked me to do something for free, I don't know if he was even asked to do it for free. Maybe he just was asked to help and they didn't talk about that he'd be compensated or not. But anyways, if a friend asked me to do something, as long as it was reasonable and what didn't take up too much time, I would probably do it.
Yeah, but it's so easy to just have the conversation, right? It's like, your friend comes to you, hey, can you help me with this mobile app? And says, yeah, sure, but you're probably not making any money right now. How about we charge this amount or flat fee per month or this amount per hour, and then you just pay me when you start making money? How difficult is to have that conversation?
You're right. Not difficult at all, but I think it goes back to what I was saying. I brought this up before. It's just a conversation that people don't want to have. There's certain things about businesses or about life, really, that are just conversations people don't want to have, and money is involved in a lot of them. So maybe this is an example of that. They don't want to talk about money, or the business owner doesn't want to bring it up, and the friend is too nice to even ask. And now we're at the point where he's locked in. It doesn't say how many hours he's worked, but you can assume from the question he's put in a lot of time.
He said hundreds of hours, actually. Let's be fair to the questioner, right? Let's answer his questions. What are his options? Assuming that there's no agreed terms, and if you want to get into a fight with your friend because, and this is what happens, if you don't discuss this stuff, then you're going to get into a dispute because the expectations aren't outlined. So now you're in a dispute. Well, you have some things going for you. For example, you just created, I'm assuming that he created a mobile app because this is a mobile app company, but there's that intellectual property there. And since you don't have anything in writing, most likely you still have rights to that intellectual property. Now, that doesn't mean that the company may not still be able to use that property, but when it comes to selling and actual ownership and whether they have a license or exclusive license or not, these are all things to keep in mind. So it's not like you have no rights, but you've already shortchanged yourself by not having that conversation. And frankly, your friend, so-called, I think shortchanged you by not having that conversation. I think it's the ownership is on the employer to push that conversation because they're in the position of power, right? If Matt, if I was asking you, hey, can you do something for me or whatever? I know because you're my friend, you're going to have trouble asking me for money. So that's why I think the ownership's on me to kind of let's put it in writing and be fair. So with that in mind, I think your friends shortchanged you.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Again, it goes back to just discuss it at the onset and get something in writing or maybe even structure it saying I'll do something for X amount of time, but once it hits a certain point, just pay me something or give me maybe even a little bit of equity into the company. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it all goes back to it just needs to be a conversation at the beginning, and that would solve this problem most likely, but it's just something that doesn't happen and it needs to.
Very good. Well, speaking of mobile apps and tech startups and so forth, you went to an event last night, didn't you, Matt?
Yeah, I went to this event. It was Founders Fight Club. And I told some people yesterday, and I got a lot of weird looks when I said Fight Club, but it wasn't your typical Fight Club like the Brad Pitt movie. But it's a bunch of startups, a lot of them, if not all of them, tech-based. I guess not all of them were tech-based, but it's a lot of tech-based startups, and it was kind of a pitch-off. So there's a few rounds, and I didn't stay the whole time, but and I'll explain that in a little bit, but just two people would get up there, the founders of these startups, and they would go 30 seconds each, and they'd have their 30 seconds to pitch. The other person would go, and then the three judges were there. They would deliberate, and they would choose one. It was pretty cool. There were some good ideas, and I enjoyed it. The one problem was, so it was at this club here in downtown San Diego, which is fine, because we were the only people there. There was a good crowd of people. It was just the people here for the event. But like I said, it was at a club and they didn't turn the music off when these people were pitching. So you see these people walk up. Some of them were kind of quiet. You know, if you don't talk as loudly, they have a microphone and there's just this house music just or this bass pumping behind the person as they're giving their pitch. And there was a couple people I couldn't even hear what they were saying.
That's so funny. I can imagine these guys going to a VC meeting and giving their 30-second pitches or whatever. And one of the VCs turning on a tape player with some music. Okay, go. And just start to throw them off.
Yeah. And maybe that was intended, but I don't think it was. And it was, I forgot another thing, other than the music, it was really dark in there, but they didn't really turn the lights on. So the lights that were on the stage were lights that you would see in a club, basically, sure. That were the lights that move around. So it was really weird setup, but it was a really cool event. I don't want to take anything away from it because sure. It was great to get a bunch of local startups in there pitching their ideas. Like I said, there were some good ideas. I talked to a couple people that pitched just because I was interested and wanted to learn more. I believe this was the first one, and other than venue selection, I think it was pretty fun, pretty successful. I would go to another one.
That's cool. I've always enjoyed the San Diego tech startup community. There's always things going on there.
Yeah, it was great. It's a good community.
Very cool. All right, well, that was a nice little break. Let's go on to our next question.
So last question here. This comes from an online sales company in Del Mar, California. What's the best way to fire a troublesome employee?
Yeah, firing an employee is difficult. I think for anyone, being fired is obviously even more difficult. And I think that's what you need to understand is that when you fire an employee, it is one of the riskiest things that as an employer that you're going to do. And so caution is definitely an important step.
I'm sure a lot of people have seen the movie Up in the Air, George Clooney. That's his job, basically. He works for a company, and all they do is third-party contract this company to come in and fire a bunch of people. At least in the movie, it was all in a row. So I guess they were professional terminators of employees. But yeah, there's definitely a right way and a wrong way to go about it. And it's not necessarily always the legal aspect that you have to think about.
That's true.
This is this person's life. This is their way they pay their bills. You have to factor in the emotional part too, but I think the legal part's probably the most important because you don't want to screw that up and then get hit with a lawsuit. It's not just legal that's considered, so there's multiple factors. But
so just hire George Clooney, right? That's the first step. Then if you can't do that, then I think your next step is to, well, there's one thing that we've done in the past is to, if you're firing your employee based on performance, then you have to make sure that you can establish that that's the reason and the real reason. And the reason I'm saying that is because when an employee is fired, even if they understand that the employer believes that they are a mediocre employee when it comes to performance, they're not necessarily going to agree with you. And they're going to look for other reasons as to why they could have been fired. And that could be, I'm a certain race, I'm a certain age, I am a certain gender. And so when they start thinking that way, they're going to start pulling other information that they've had in their experience. Like, what about that one joke that my boss said once that was a little on edge? And they're going to start using this material to say that he or she was wrongfully terminated. And so establishing a record of employment history, that's why these performance reviews are always done. And exit interviews, that's what George Clooney does in Up in the Air. And those are very important. But by far, you know, this is obviously selling our own services, but you have to get an attorney before you fire an employee, especially a troublesome one.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's something, well, one, you need to have some sort of guidelines in place and follow them. But yeah, always consult an attorney, just because exactly like you said, when you terminate someone, I would guess a lot of times that they're not going to think, oh, I'm just bad at my job. They'll think there's other reasons why. And that's why the discrimination suits always pop up.
Yep.
I like what you said with the performance reviews, just documenting everything that was done. And if there's ever any problems with, I would assume if they're firing someone and if it's not for downsizing purposes, you know, it's for things they've done in the past, just make sure to document those and write them down and keep it in a file. That's why you could have a HR person that would be in charge of all that in a bigger company. But even if you don't have that sort of person, just make sure you write all that down and keep a log of it.
And just as an example, we had a client which had a trouble employee. And the trouble that we were having with this employee was, on one hand, this person was not showing up to work, etc., being mediocre at his job, but only recently. And one of the reasons was is because he was going through some medical issues. But those medical issues had subsided, but now he's still not performing well. And so the risk was is that if we terminate him, then the problem with that is that he may come back and say, well, you terminated me because of my medical condition, therefore it's wrongful termination. So what we did is I go, look, you know, if he's not hurting your company, keep him on and continue to do those performance reviews and continue to tell him, look, this is quantifiable. You are not doing X, Y, and Z. And this is what the expectation at the beginning, and this is what we expect of you. Long story short, because he couldn't maintain those kind of expectations, he ended up resigning himself because we were able to convince him that he was not holding up to his bargain of the deal instead of putting it on us to terminate him. And of course, our client also saved on a unemployment claim as well.
They just forced out a worker who was having medical issues.
Well, yeah, take that with a grain of salt.
I feel bad for him.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty funny. I mean, but that's true. Matt brings a good point is that there's something called constructive termination too. So just because you don't fire the person doesn't mean that they still can be considered as terminated by the employer. So you could make the work environment so hostile or so hard to work in that the person just is forced to quit.
Right, right.
That's not exactly what I was advising or what we actually did, but that's a very good point.
So I think to sum this up, basically do the exact opposite of everything that happens on The Office.
Oh, that's a great point. I think The Office in general is a great employment manual of what not to do. But even in there, they did exit interviews, which I think, even though they were done incorrectly, but hey, at least they did them.
Yeah, there's always something pretty hilarious that happened that was just blatantly wrong. They probably would have gotten sued for, but
I think you mentioned before when he gave Toby a rock with, what did it say? I forgot.
Toby was leaving. He didn't get fired, but
oh, that's right.
It was his exit interview. And I think Michael Scott had a gift that was wrapped and there was the holly. So why don't you just open it?
Yeah.
Pam's like, oh yeah, you should open it. Michael said, oh, no, just wait. Maybe he should wait till he leaves. It was just a rock that had a rubber band with a note on it saying, suck on this. For some reason, I just thought that was hilarious. I don't know.
I'm trying to remember if I've ever advised one of my clients to do that. I don't think I have. I hope not.
Well, Toby ended up coming back, so it didn't even work.
Very good.
All right. So we have one more article here. This is kind of funny. Well, I guess funny and not funny, but this is a story about a fan who went to a baseball game, Kansas City Royals game, and he got hit in the eye by a hot dog. That's why I said it was funny. But then seeing that he suffered eye injuries, it wasn't so funny. But it was thrown by the mascot. You know, during the game, mascots and they have other people that are involved with the team go out there and usually throw stuff. Usually it's t-shirts or something like that, or maybe baseballs, but not hard baseballs, more softer ones. I don't think I've ever seen people throwing out hot dogs before. I would feel like it would just unravel while you were throwing it, but that's its own issue. So he got hit in the eye with the hot dog and now is suing. And it all brings into question this quote-unquote baseball rule, which, you know, if you go to a game, there's a certain assumption that there's objects that fly into the stands. Obviously, baseballs, bats can break in half. Those are the most common ones. But what about stuff that isn't in the course of the game? For example, something thrown by a mascot or something thrown by the other personnel that are out there. If that injures someone, is the team liable? And that's kind of what this whole lawsuit is about.
You know, I was taking this kind of lightly too, but then I read he had to have two surgeries, one to repair a detached retina and the other to remove a cataract that developed and implant an artificial lens. You know, on the upside, it only cost him $4,800 in medical cost. That's pretty good.
Yeah. This all boils down to the assumption of risk, and it does say the baseball rule, but it's an assumption of risk, and it's an interesting issue for any sort of athletic event that you go to, because like I was saying, you do have some sort of expectation that at least most people that go to games, at least a baseball might fly to you or foul ball. I know I've caught a foul ball before, so.
Yeah, I'd be one of those guys that got hit by one.
I wanted to say that because I was proud of it.
But you're right, assumption of the risk is the legal standard. And that applies to all sports, right? And they're saying that there's a baseball rule, but that's probably more common here. What about hockey? Same thing, right?
Yeah, hockey's big. That's probably even worse because
those pucks are flying fast.
In baseball, most foul balls aren't coming at you that quick. Any hockey puck that flies out is going to be traveling so fast that it's really dangerous. Any sport, really. So I think baseball and hockey are bigger ones.
I don't know about this hot dog thing, though, because when I go to a baseball game, which I love baseball, I know everything about baseball, but don't ask me any trivia questions. When I go to a baseball game, I don't expect any hot dogs flying at me. This was a mascot, right? But is it common for these hot dog vendors to be throwing food around?
No, it isn't. But the thing is, when you go to games, I like baseball a lot, so I don't get bored. But a lot of people that go to baseball games are usually really bored.
Yes.
And what the people really get excited for is in between innings, people love free stuff, whatever it is. When you go to any sporting event, if someone comes out and is throwing free stuff into the crowd, that's the most excited people get true. During a game.
It's very true.
Unless there's some sort of game-winning shot or a walk-off home run. It's just people go ecstatic for this free stuff. It's things you can buy for a dollar or, in this case, a hot dog. So I didn't think about this till now. It would be very difficult to not realize what was going on around him. So maybe he was standing up like a lot of people or even sitting down and a hot dog just got flung over and he wasn't, you know, really paying attention and it must have hit him in the eye. But even then it's...
Yeah, but what do you expect? Like, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention and now I got $5,000 worth of surgery and now a fake lens in my eye. I don't see that. You know, the hot dog is just too much, but t-shirts I can understand because those are soft and so forth. If I get hit by a t-shirt, I think I'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, this is in Missouri, in Kansas City, or at least the case was brought in Missouri. I guess the precedent was set in California back in the late 90s when they ruled that mascots are not an essential part of the game. So I think that's what this whole debate's over. So, you know, if that were the case, if that were to be upheld in this case, then the team would be liable, or they could sue the mascot, I guess, but they'd probably want to go after the team since sports teams make so much money. I would assume the mascot is not some billionaire running around in a slugger costume.
Well, yeah, he's a non-essential apparently, so yeah. I'm sure a non-essential employee is not getting paid that much.
I'll be interested to see how this turns out because I went to a Yankees game in New York a few years ago and we were sitting really high up. I don't know if any listeners have been to the new Yankee Stadium. We were sitting extremely high up and there was a sign right in front of us saying, you know, warning, watch out for flying objects, baseballs or bats.
Bats?
I thought it was a stretch for a baseball to get up there just by where we were sitting. It would have to be very hardly hit foul ball behind. But I was like, bats? There's no bats that are going to fly. I don't think like the world record.
Wait. Do they mean baseball bats or just like bats, like flying bats?
Baseball bats.
Oh, okay.
Because they can split, because that's probably the most dangerous thing is either when a hitter lets go of a bat accidentally or it breaks in half because then it's splintered. But those things, if you've ever had a bat that's just end over end flying at you, that's a lot harder to try to catch than a baseball.
Well, that reminds me when I played T-ball for one season and one season only, that was my biggest problem is that I would, as soon as I hit the ball, I would throw the bat. And I even got a penalty or something like that because I don't know why it's a penalty, but somehow I got a penalty for doing that. But.
That's in some sort of movie, some kid's baseball movie where a kid finally gets a hit and he's running around with the bat in his hands around the bases and everyone's just scared that he's going to swing it at him. I forget what movie that is, but that was you basically. Finally got a hit. Me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think that's our episode. Episode number 4. Legally Sound Smart Business. That was a good one.
Yeah, I think people are going to like this one.
Yeah.
Obviously, they are now that we're saying this at the end, that's so hopefully true. They've listened through everything. I think people liked this one.
Well, if you're hearing it now, I think it's a good time to rewind and listen to it again to confirm your belief that it's a good episode.
Before you rewind, just make sure to leave a review on iTunes as well, and then you can start from the beginning and listen to it.
Oh, that's true. And we said we're going to do some shout-outs with that, right?
Yeah, we will once we get some reviews.
Oh, great. Okay. Hopefully good reviews only, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's our episode. Thank you for joining us again. And you can send in your questions, and we'll answer it on air at ask@legallysoundsmartbusiness.com. Thank you for joining us.
Bye.
This has been the Legally Sound Smart Business Show with your hosts, Nasser Pasha and Matt Staub. The Legally Sound Smart Business Show is your weekly look at legal news and questions in the business world. Legally Sound Smart Business is a podcast that is intended but not promised or guaranteed to be current, complete, or up to date, and should in no way be taken as an indication of future results. No attorney-client relationship is created by listening or submitting questions to the podcast. The podcast does not constitute legal advice, but rather is offered only for general informational and educational purposes. You should not act or rely on any information in the podcast without first seeking the advice of an attorney. The opinions expressed in the podcast reflect the views of those individuals and do not necessarily represent the views of any other individual or business. For more information about the Legally Sound Smart Business Show, visit legallysoundsmartbusiness.com.